Sam is the only kid he knows who goes to church, who is made to go to church 2 or 3 times a month. He rarely wants to go. Well, this is not exactly true. The truth is, he never wants to go. What young boy would rather be in church on the weekends than hanging out with a friend? It does not help him to be reminded that once he's there, he actually enjoys himself, that he gets to spend the time drawing in a little room outside the sanctuary, that he only actually has to sit still and listen to the big people during a short children's sermon. And it does not help that I always pack some snacks, some Legos, his favorite art supplies, and bring along any friend of him whom we can lure into our churchy web. It does not help that he genuinely cares for the people there. All that matters to him is that he alone, among his colleagues, is forced to spend Sunday mornings in church. You might think, noting the bitterness, the resignation, that he was being made to sit through a 6-hour Latin Mass. Or you might wonder why I made this scrapping 7-year-old exuberant boy come with me most weeks. And if you were to ask, this is what I would say. I make him because I can. I outweigh him by nearly 75 pounds. But that is only part of it. The main reason is that I want to give him what I found in the world, which is to say, a path and a little light to see by. Most of the people I know who have what I want, which is to say, purpose, heart, balance, connection, joy, and gratitude, are people with a deep sense of spirituality. They are people living in community, who pray or practice their faith. They are Buddhists, Jews, Christians, people banding together to work on themselves and for human rights. They follow a brighter light than the glimmer of their own candle. They are part of something beautiful. I saw something once that said, a human life is like a single letter of the alphabet, and alone, it is meaningless. Or, it can be a part of great meaning when put together with other letters. Our funky little church is filled with people who are working for peace and freedom, who are out there on the streets and inside praying. And they are home writing letters. And they are at the shelters with giant platters of food. When I was at the end of my rope, the people at St. Andrews in Marin, California, tied a knot in that rope for me and helped me hold on. The church became my home in the old meaning of the word home. That it's where, when you show up, they just have to let you in. They let me in. They even said, you come back now, you hear? Church has become my home base.
Good morning, my beloved friends. So what about us? Why have we come to church? Is church our home base? And if it is, what does that mean? What does that look like? What does that promise and also maybe require of us? If we were to take time and ask each other these questions for real, I suspect we would hear a range of answers, including, perhaps, for some of us, church is a habit. Church is a routine we have established over the months or years, or maybe even a lifetime. For others, it may be a new pattern or practice that we are trying again after being away, or maybe starting for the very first time. And granted, still for others who may in fact be outweighed by 70 pounds by someone else, we may simply not have had a choice but here we are. Last week's Christian Century Weekly magazine included a chart of reasons why people say they go to church and the percentages of each of the 9 reasons that they found. I won't repeat all of them, but I think 3 are important. The lowest, 16%, of those polled said that they attended religious services at least once or twice a month. By the way, that's the new definition of those who go to church regularly. 16% said that they attended to please their family, a spouse, or a partner. The highest, 81% of those polled said they attended religious services at least once or twice a month to become closer to God. And then, tucked in the middle, is the answer given that I am increasingly more and more interested in for us here at Trinity. Stuck right in the middle, 57% of those polled said that they attended religious services once or twice a month to, quote, be a part of a community of faith. Suffice to say that people come to a place in a time like this for many reasons. And interesting as those reasons are, to be sure, what I am almost more interested in is, regardless of how or why we came here today, whether out of habit or curiosity or joy or despair or being outweighed by someone who made us be here, what is it? What is it that binds us together once we are finally here? Once we come together and claim that by coming together, we become the church. And that is why I began with Anne Lamott's wonderful excerpt from her book, Traveling Mercies, Some Thoughts on Faith. For those of you who have read her writings over the years, you know that she is raw and vulnerable and gritty in her writing, and she simply does not hold back. And that amidst all the self-described chaos in her life, dealing with addiction and religious doubts and massive personal struggles and losses, she made the somewhat counterintuitive decision as a young pregnant woman to find her way to the back pew of a small Presbyterian church in Northern California. And then slowly, she started going back, week after week after week, eventually talking to one person, and then another person, and then deciding that she was home. She goes on to say, "Church is where I was taken in when I had absolutely nothing to give. And it has become, in the truest, deepest sense, my home." What I had forgotten in that description that I just reread you were 3 important words describing what she found in that community: connection, gratitude, and joy. Additionally, I just want to point out what is not included in her description of why church became her home base. Church was not the place where everyone looked alike or thought alike or acted in ways that she did. She didn't find a community of like-minded voters or similar consumer spenders or those of equal pay grade or employment status. Also missing in her description is a desire to surround herself with those who are well-versed in any one particular tradition, or who want to pray or sing or hear the word in exactly the same way that she wants to. Finally, there is nothing in her descriptor about membership. She seems woefully silent on exactly who could or should be in this desired community, this place that offers connection, gratitude, and joy. I love that. I love all that because it calls attention to what I think we are called to struggle with here at Trinity right now. Trinity's descriptors of progressive, inclusive, creative, and downtown are so important and are also at times, I think, as challenging as they are encouraging. Sometimes I feel we are more focused on being all things to all people that we just may slip into being nothing in particular to any. Does that make sense? So this year we are going to work hard on questions of identity. We are going to craft a framework and a lens to look through together and try to see and hear ways to claim who we are as followers of Christ. We want Jesus and the gospel to help us clarify who and why we are here and how we are being called to live into our particular identity as a radically inclusive and welcoming Christian community. I want each and every one of us to be able to articulate why we are here at this very particular and I would say sacred moment and in this place in downtown Toledo. That's a tall order, so today let's just start small. Let's start with the notion that we too want to be known as a place of connection, of gratitude, of joy. Well, how do we do that? Well, today's gospel from Mark might help point us in the right direction. Mark reminds us that what we say and what we do really does reveal who we are. It's just that simple. Sometimes it's just that complicated. Jesus knew that. The gospel writer of Mark seems to want us to know that too. And yet I know firsthand it's all too easy to forget. Whether Jesus is addressing the Pharisees who are trying to catch him in some kind of a contradiction, or the crowds, or his beloved, though sometimes daft disciples, Jesus' message is the same. What separates us from God is not what comes from the outside, but from within our own hearts. What separates us from the divine are the contradictions we create when what we do or what we say is not in harmony or balance with our God-given selves. If our life in community is to be about reflecting connection and gratitude and joy, then today's strong words in the gospel hold us accountable to everything we say and do ourselves, and to each other, and out in the rest of the world. Our words and our actions are indeed windows into our deep and beautiful souls, and they are also reflections of our deepest intentions and values. It has been said that our younger generations have a very well-tuned BS meter, a way to smell and sense inauthenticity and contradictions a mile away. And I think we would do well to listen to them and see what they hear and smell when they walk through these doors or participate in this community. You see, anyone who tells you that following Jesus is easy, well, simply, in my opinion, they're not really paying attention to some of the fine print. This morning on my drive in, I listened to a wonderful interview of Eugene Peterson. He's now 85 years old. He's a Presbyterian pastor and scholar. He was the man who created the transliteration of the Bible called The Message. He was a pastor in a church for nearly 30 years. This is a guy who has walked the walk. And he spoke so beautifully about what he now believes about why church is still important. His advice, after being a pastor for 3 decades, is simply and profoundly this. Pick the closest and smallest church you can. Stay for 6 months at that church, and then decide if it's a place you can put down roots. If it's not, choose again another church that is close and small, and begin again. When asked why small was important, he seemed to echo what we just heard Anne Lamott say. He said, I wasn't totally transcribing this on my drive, just want to say. I think he said something like this. Church should be the place where you are known and loved, even when you are not lovable. And also the place where you are willing to do the same for others. Trying to do that in a large place may be possible, but it's a lot harder. So, while I'm not suggesting that this be our church growth model, I am mindful. I am mindful that being the church means showing up for each other and out in the world in ways that align with what we say and pray and sing about here in this place every week. Because what we say and what we do matters. You see, being a disciple isn't about membership privileges, but rather about finding ways to continually strip away our false selves, our pride, our fear, our arrogance, in order to reveal what is pure and humble of heart. So as many of us go back to school as teachers and administrators and students, and as we get ready to start a new program year here at church, and as we continue to explore new ministry opportunities in our beautiful downtown community, may we also stay aware of this challenge and this morning's gospel imperative. I pray this year will be a time of learning to live even more deeply into a clearly articulated identity of who we are and why we are so committed to this ministry that we share with God's help. If we truly believe hungry people deserve food, lonely people deserve comfort, hurting people deserve healing, and that there should always be enough room and respect for adding one more person to this table of love, then I believe with my whole heart that we best get about doing that work that is real and gritty and subversive and sometimes contrary. We are simply called by this power of love to be of use. So how better to end this morning than with one of my favorite poems by Marge Piercy of that same title, To Be of Use. The people I love the best jump into work head first, without dallying in the shadows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bag along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in a common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire must be put out. The work of the world is common as mud. Botched, it smears the hands, crumbles to dust. But the thing worth doing well has a shape that satisfies clean and evident. Greek amorphous for wine or oil. Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums, but you know that they were made to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real. My beloved friends, may this be our charge this program year, to recklessly throw away our love and to do what needs to be done, because ours are the only hands and ours might be the only feet. And rest assured that as we do that, what will come back to us tenfold will indeed be connection and gratitude and great joy. May it be so.